Hey guys, and welcome to season 4 of the Yes People podcast. I'm your host, Savia Rocks, and in this season, we get to remember and reminisce back in time with some of our guests like...
Hey, we are Entity,
and you're listening to...
The Us People podcast
with Savia Rocks.
Hey, my name is Stephen Ridley, and you're listening to the Us People podcast with the lovely Savia Rocks, keeping it positive.
Hi, my name is James Green. I'm a TV presenter, sports reporter, and journalist.
Hi, this is Joy Langley, and I'm the author of Navigating Stress.
Hey, this is Travis Glossop. I am a creative radio producer for Kiss FM, and you're listening to the Us People podcast with Savia Rocks.
We highlight the strengths of our cultures, talking about diversity and inclusion, and speaking out loud and proud about who we are.
I was never that good. I was determined. I had a love for the sport, and that always fueled me.
But arriving into London and kind of growing up in a really difficult situation, trying to make sense of my life with my, you know, with at home and not being accepted by the people around me, because there was, in the 60s, there was tremendous racism growing up in London.
It's great. I'm glad, because I didn't really work that hard at uni, so it was good to leave uni and really like get on it, you know, really like, because I also, as a person, I value productivity. A lot of people live to work. I think I am one of the work to live guys, but because my work is amazing, that's all right with me. You know, so as a person, I go to bed happy when I've had a productive day.
We've also saved the best till last by honouring another artist and showcasing their talent as our new theme song, with none other than your host, Savia Rocks, featuring in their song. So guys, enjoy, stay creative, and as always, please continue to be kind to one another. Let's go.
Hi, my name's Darren Stanley. I'm here on the Us People podcast with Savia Rocks. She's very kindly welcomed me onto her show to talk about all things creative, filmmaking, taking photographs, good energy, working, staying positive. Listen to the podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the Yes People podcast. I'm your host, Savia Rocks, and today I've got Darren here with me, who's a director. Darren, thank you so much for coming on the Yes People podcast. How are you?
I'm very well.
Perfect. I like the... Oh, you sounded so smooth there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
You sounded really smooth. I was like, oh, okay.
All the running I've been doing lately.
So I'm going to jump into... Actually, I was reading your bio.
Yeah.
And, Darren, you're based in London and you're an award-winning director. But I'm going to go back a little bit. I'm going to go back to where it all started for you.
Yeah, sure.
It's okay. I'm going to go back to your upbringing a little bit. And the reason why I ask this is just so to get to know you as an individual. So could you tell me a little bit about your upbringing and how that made you creative, and where was your first impact of you being creative and going into this?
Good question. I think film, yeah, I'm a child of the VHS generation, I think. And I think I'll take that further back. Cinema was always the big thing. As a kid, I'd get film magazines, and this is obviously prior to the internet, and find any detail I could about an upcoming film. And I think I'm a child of the VHS generation, you know, the video store. And I'm buying movies and going to the cinema and having, parents that were very happy to drop me off at the cinema with my brothers. And we just love movies. And I realized very early on that there's this job you could do, which was not movies, but you could direct commercials.
Yeah.
And it's quite well known that. Sadly enough, one of my best friends would back me up, but he's not here with us anymore. When I was around 15, saying, you know, I think I want to direct commercials, and they're laughing at me. And, you know, I actually went to art college, like most people, and I didn't really know about film school, and I did advertising, which I knew very, very early on in the course that wasn't quite right for me. And I actually hung out with photographers, the photographer course, who were my friends.
Yeah.
And I was happier there, but I did the year and a half or what it was before we all got turfed down to London. And actually, I remember saying to my tutors at college in Newcastle, I want to direct, I want to direct commercials, I want to be like Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott was the kind of, you know, he was there on the pedestal, Blade Runner, Alien. You know, those type of movies, you know, were like, oh my God, yes, that's filmmaking. I knew he was a commercials director and he did advertising. So I thought if you did advertising, that was a step.
Yeah.
A step towards it. And I remember going to my tutor saying I want to direct. And they said, no, you're better off being a creative. And I again, as a creative, I never really fitted into the kind of college pattern of, and I worked on my own instead of being in a copywriter, art director kind of group in which they put us in. I found that it was too business orientated. It wasn't about expanding and finding ways into interesting ways of being a creative, especially in advertising, which I think was very Saatchi and Saatchi led at the time, which is nothing wrong with that. They were amazing, but I wanted to explore and be more experimental. And to cut a very long story short, I ended up working as a junior art director in an ad agency in Leeds, where I'm from, my hometown. And they would say to me again, you know, Darren, this isn't London, you know, your ideas. And I ended up just being a paste-up board artist for all these senior art directors at this quite big agency, actually. And the creative director there was a guy called Keith Lishman, who, you know, nice guy, actually. He actually made me redundant. The whole creative department got made redundant. And I remember him sitting in the boardroom with me and saying, I'm doing this for your own good, because if you stay here, you're going to be stuck here.
Okay, I understand it.
Which was, if you think about it, was such a kind of a raw kindness. He knew I had ambitions, and I knew I actually wanted to direct. And during that period, there was a guy who did, I don't know if you know the movie American History X.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it. I've heard of it.
I forget. It's a few years old now, but it's an incredible piece of filmmaking by a director called Tony Kay, who did some of the biggest commercials of that period and still is an amazing talent, incredible talent, who is at long past his due getting recognised again, I think. Anyway, he was a big commercials director, and he always said he'd never refuse to speak to anyone or give advice to anyone. Yeah. I took him up on that offer. I'd blow his quotes up like into poster size and just send them through the post to his offices in London and Los Angeles. Anyway, got made redundant, raided my dad's fridge, set up a little office there, trying to do whatever I could do to earn some money. And I had a pair of old Levi's on at the time, ripped at the knees.
Yeah.
Took them off. I wrote in marker pen, give me a fucking job. I'm broke. This is a true story. And I sent them out to LA. And I think a week later, his producer, who's a lady called Eileen Terry, phoned me up and went, hey, Darren, got your jeans, very cute.
Yeah.
Lives in London. Give him a ring. So I phoned him up and he answered. And he said, come and meet me Monday morning, 9 a.m. at the Groucho Club in Soho.
Okay.
Okay. Remember, there's been a period of around a year trying to get in front of him. So this was it. I took my little portfolio from college under my arm and I went to London. And I went to the Groucho Club, 9 a.m., and 10 past 9 came, 20 past 9 came, didn't turn up. Anyway, I found up his office, or I can't remember, I got hold of him. And he went, oh yeah, I forgot. Go back to the office and meet me there. So I went back to the office and they were just looking at me. It was like, you know, those scenes in the Western, and they're going to lose my little portfolio. And I just thought, I'm going to be here all day. I'm going to try and intercept him. So I found his schedule. And every time I got to where I thought he was, he'd left by a minute. And it was like something from a film. It was quite funny when I think about it. Anyway, it got to around late afternoon and he was at a big agency called Abbott Mead Vickers doing a meeting on a Guinness campaign, which he went on to direct. And the creatives that he was doing the meeting with came in. And weirdly enough, there's a guy called Walter Campbell, who he was famous. He did the Guinness Surfer. He wrote the Guinness Surfer commercial, and he wrote Under the Skin, which is a film with Scarlett Johansson. And he remembered me from being a student showing him my portfolio. It must have been 2 years prior, maybe more. I don't know. Thick, you know, dressed in Yoji Yamamoto black and cropped blonde hair. He looked like a pint of Guinness, you know. A very nice guy, Walter. And he remembered me and he goes, what are you doing here? And I said, that I'm trying to get hold of Tony Kaye. He says, oh, it's back at the Groucho. So it's like a scene from a film, you know, door, taxi slam, light goes on, ding, ding, ding. It's the Groucho. Reception, is Tony Kaye here? Yes, he'll come and meet you in reception. And Tony comes out, and he's, in those days, he was like the mid-90s, and very, very young, very young. He's got long hair, he's LA designer, hippie, very cool looking, very tall. And like, oh my God, this is it. And he's laughing his head off. He's laughing his head off at me. And he goes, where's your jeans? And I had taken a Polaroid of them prior to sending them in the post, and I just pulled it out of my back pocket. Go back to the office. Go back to the office. And he sprawls out on this couch opposite me. What can I do for you? I thought, this is it. If I didn't do it now,
yeah.
I want to direct, I want you to teach me. And he's laughing his head off. And he's looking through my portfolio. And he's just, nah, 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 nah. And at the back was a photograph I'd taken of this kind of gypsy kid holding a pigeon. In black and white outside Leeds Market, and he picked it up and he loved it, and I wish I had it still. It's still one of the best photographs I've probably ever taken, and he loved it, and he just went. So we went for a walk around Carnaby Street, and it was probably March, April, and it was quite dark, I remember it. And he says, you'll come down and we'll build. And I thought, you know, great. He says, can you stay? And I stupidly went, no, I've got to go home for a bit. To cut another long story even shorter, I did come down a few months later, and 2 weeks later, he took a shine to me. I was making teas and doing the laundry. And I was asked to be his assistant. And I became his assistant. And his being his assistant was like Mickey Mouse in that film Fantasia with the buckets of water.
Yeah.
He once asked me what, you know, what do you, because it was crazy. It was amazing, insane, like the pressure and the amount, you know, coming from, it's like jumping from literally into a frying pan, but in the best way. I learned, it was film school. He was brilliant, Tony, with me. He was really encouraging. I learned a lot just being around these huge multi-million pound sets, being in edit suites, being in meetings, learning so much, incredible. I couldn't have asked for a better beginning. So that's the long story of that.
That's a good story.
It's a good story.
What's the one thing that you would say you have taken with you from that experience?
Tear it down, respect it, do better. Always. Okay. Take a project and push it and push it and push it and push it. And you can, I mean, so much. I mean, I learned about, I think, which I know with people I've worked with who've said they've learned from me, but it's because I learned it from Tony, it was casting, how important casting is, how incredibly, it's a skill in itself. And it's not just because someone looks pretty or is cool looking. And sometimes, you know, I've had experiences, which I can talk about, I probably can, where, you know, I've had agencies saying, no, we want him, we want him. And I said, don't. He looks great, but they can't act.
Yeah.
And they've insisted. And then we've had him on set and, you know, it's not been an easy shoot. Yeah. Even when you explain that, because you learn these things, you know where their level is, where you can take them. You can always, it's casting is an art, and I think Woody Allen summed it up. You cast people for being who they are, and I think you get them there, and then your job's a lot easier, you know. It's about casting. There's only some people think you have a magic wand and you can make anyone act. And it's quite funny. There's many times when I've had people say, oh, yeah, you need to put me in a commercial. Or I've had friends who have got daughters or, you know, who's, I've had this a few times, you know, friends of my dad or my mum and say, oh, so-and-so, she wants to act. Can you put her in a commercial? And you go, well, it's not that easy. You know, to be able to do five takes with different variations. And, you know, it's, great actors are incredible. Working fantastic. Funny enough, I was talking to an actress last night. She's actually a teacher as well. And she was in a commercial I made that never got released. And she was amazing, Lisa. And I wrote this really funny comedy script, which is, I thought it was funny anyway. And she ran a model agency. It was this. It was almost like The Office. And we just threw out lines, and she played this Eastern European booker. And Carolina, 2 K's, the first one silent. And she was so funny. And to this day, it makes me laugh seeing that commercial. I wish it got released. And I was saying, you know, I so want to work with you again. She was just brilliant, you know. And it was a pleasure. And I've had another experience recently where one actor was great and one a little bit more challenging. Yeah. And, you know, that was a struggle because, you know, certain reasons.
Let's break down the process of casting, because I've always wanted to understand more about casting, if that's okay. In the sense of, how does it all work with casting, from you having an idea to you wanting to get people in to take it to the next level and finding the right people, like you were saying, to be able to give it all the energy and
budget.
Oh yeah, no, that's true.
Budget with everything. Okay. To say you've got a decent budget, I would go with a great casting director, you know, because you can give a brief. Yeah. And also knowing about actors, knowing who's around, even if obviously you're not going to be able to get Robert De Niro, well, you probably could these days, get Robert De Niro in your commercial. You know, I can't forgive him for that one. The Graces, like, Once Upon a Time in America, you know? Where was I? I've lost my thread. It's a case of, but if you have actors in mind, you go, I want someone like this. Like, there was an actor, talking about that actor I worked with a while back, and it wasn't who I wanted, and the agency wanted him. I said, Dan, there's this other actor. And he was like Stanley Tucci. And I thought he was great. He was slightly balding, but we had Jason Hawke styling him, and he was great, very stylish. And I think he would have been great. And the irony was, the other guy was, it was okay. He was fine. We got through it, and it was fine. The agency weren't that happy with him. And they wanted to redub him. And they looked at actors' tapes, and they picked, the producer told me about this when we were at the grading stage, and he said, they picked a tape. I won't say the brand, I won't say names. And they picked your original choice. And then we said, oh, so there you go. That sums up casting sometimes. But it's down to budget. It's a great casting director. And it's knowing. It's about doing castings as well, being in the room with them and seeing what they can do.
Yeah.
You know, throwing things out. Are they good at, you know, improv? Can they give you variations, you know? And I sometimes like them to be a little bit more over the top. I'd rather an actor come in and be a little bit too big in their casting, because you know you can bring them down. If you can't bring them up, it's harder. And is that line? I always think of it when I'm casting, there's a line here and here. If they're here, it's fine because I can bring them down. But if they're here and bringing them up is sometimes not good. You can't do it.
Is that because of confidence?
No, it's just skill sets. You know, it's like great actors are great actors. You know, there's different. Yeah. And, you know, great actors have great agents. And great agents aren't stupid. They know that these great actors deserve X, Y, and Z to be paid. Yeah. And sometimes you can't, you don't have that in the budget. You know?
Oh, wow.
With commercials, it's always a little bit harder, you know, because it's a commercial property.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing something that's a little bit more, you know, for the love of it, a short film, then you can do deals.
Okay. I've always wanted to understand it a little bit better, which is quite cool. Talk to me about, because I went on your website and I had a look and I saw in the corner, I think you're going to know what I'm going to talk about now. It says photography, music, videos, and short films.
Yeah.
So I want to get into all of those with you.
Yeah, sure.
I want to get into your photography, your music videos, and your short films that you've actually worked on. Could you talk about your favorite ones? Could you talk about the ones that challenged you as an individual? And could you talk about ones that have just made you reevaluate how you do things?
What, in photography?
Oh, in all of them, in your music videos, wow. Your photography, because all of them have something different to bring.
Yeah, I think that's that. I have a different hat for it every job.
Okay.
Which is sometimes works as detrimental towards me when I've had people try to sell me into projects because they're not quite sure which. A very big executive producer of a big production company I was with sat me on the couch, says, "Darling, you're very talented, but you do everything. What are you?" Which I took to heart, actually. And because I thought, shouldn't I be able to do everything? And actually, no, people want to package you and present you as this so they can sell you into that. And I've not out of being rebellious or trying to be clever, I've kind of just done what I've needed to do, adopted what I've needed to adopt for the project I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted to do more comedy as well as slightly more, I guess, filmic kind of emotional type of ads or whatever I'm known to do. Because I don't, just because I've done that for the last job isn't what I want to do for the next job. You know, I'd like to do something different. Photography is an incredible passion because I think that was my key into being behind a camera. Anyone can pick up a camera, even, you know, when I first picked up a camera. And I went back to, it goes back to my studying days at Newcastle, and I was happier being in the library reading photographic books, which I'd never really seen before, with all these great 60s New York photographers like Robert Frank, Lee Friedlander, Mary Ellen Mark, William Klein, you know, Dean Arbus. And I've always felt as a photographer a little bit like, I feel very much akin to that type of New York street photographer. I think I'm definitely in some ways a photographer that directs and a director that photographs.
I like that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element that creeps in to me.
It's definitely different.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I used to operate my camera all the time, but I've been working for the past few years with a really good cinematographer. And the last job made me realise I miss operating my own camera. And I decided that it's the last job I've just literally finished, that it's a watershed. I'm going back to really operating my camera from now on. I just feel that I can get there quicker and I can shoot more. And it's just mentally more economical for me. Well, that depends, unless I'm a great cinematographer, but yeah. Music videos, you know, I've not done that many, but I've done a few, and do you know the rapper Kalashnikov?
Yes.
Okay, Darren is his real name. So Clash and we're friends, actually, because, you know, it makes total sense that hardcore urban rapper would want a middle-class Jewish kid to direct all his videos. It's total sense. The equation. We get on very well. And I did a music video for them a few years back. And every year we nearly do another project. It never quite gets there. I mean, last year I was hair's whisker about doing something of his new album, which is brilliant. He's great. He's really good. And he's got a real soul to his work. And we work together, and he he saw the, I draw, I sketch. One of my biggest, I think, skill sets is being able to put pen to paper. And
yeah.
I'm a doodler, which actually goes back to how does it all come from? It comes from my dad. Being a very young kid, what he'd do is a scribble on a piece of paper and I had to make something out of it. I was happier as a kid either watching movies or having a sketch pad and doing comic strips, which are, I do my own storyboards. So it all comes from, you know, those early things.
Yeah.
And I showed him these great drawings and I wanted to do this music video, which was kind of, he'd be the first black president, kind of a Kennedy. This is a good few years before Barack Obama. And I showed him this, I had this great photographic book about JFK. I said, we're going to do this and we're going to, he wanted to do at that point, you know, all the, I would say, those cliches that you see still today, which I think are detrimental. And I think a cliche, you know, and I wanted to do something which was very white psych, just to keep everything contained and very graphic. And I think was very influenced by my love of maybe French directors and photographers like Jean-Baptiste Mondino and Jean-Paul Good, who I'm a big fan of. And I just thought economically it'd be great. And, just black and white, again, because I didn't have the lighting kit I need, and it's easy to shoot black and white and grade it that way.
True.
A few ideas for effects. And I just had this really, I did all these great scribbles, and he loved it. And even on the set, they didn't quite know. It was riotous. It was like a house party going on. And I'm trying to work, and I've got no money. There was a lot going on there. We fought through it, and Scribbler, who was one of the, it was his group at that point called Terra Firma, which was Scribbler, Kaiser, and Clash. And I think it was Scribbler was looking at the monitor, and he started to see what I was doing, and Clash's manager was starting to go, wow, every shot, yeah. And I was really on, it was one of those things where we had no money, no time. I had an idea. Everyone worked really hard production-wise behind the scenes to help me do it. And it all came together. It flowed, even though there was this absolute chaos going around me. And somehow it was one of my favorite shoots. You know, I was able to zone off. And, you know, sometimes less is more. And it's a really good video. And it still holds up today, I think. I'd love to get a proper HD version of it. God knows where it is. And we've stayed in touch, and he went off, disappeared for a bit, and he came back a couple last year, and said, "Yeah, you need to. I've got an album. I want you to do all the videos. I want you to do this one. We're going to do a big photographic book. We're going to do an exhibition, and we're going to do. It was very deep what he was doing. It was all about knife violence and this and the other." And we had a really nice idea, and certain elements didn't quite get their act together, and I just could only stay on it for so long before I had to say, guys, come back to me when you're ready. And we stayed in touch, and he'll circle around again. We became friends, and his team, actually, are very nice, really good boys. Many an evening and afternoon chatting about this video, and I got to know them well, really good people.
But sometimes a project isn't ready yet.
Well, that's it with him. I think, you know, from that one video with Chaos, we became friends, and he trusts me, and he knows that I've got his back, and I'm always trying to do the best for him. And I do that with anyone. I put my heart and soul into things, and sometimes it just exhausts me because I don't have a big production company around me. I have just me and whoever I bring in freelance. And it's hard work, you know, when you're doing creative directing, you know, and trying to get everything for a price. And I've spent many a night when I've not had the budget holding out for a good editor and having to go into Soho at 8 o'clock at night and work through the night editing with some brilliant younger editors, you know.
Yeah.
You get the genius. And I found over the years, those editors I've been very lucky with who were juniors when I got them, because that's who the edit suite would give me, have gone on to be big editor, so yeah, I struck out lucky, you know. So those night shifts, God, they're a killer. But yeah, whatever it takes.
They're definitely worth it in the end.
Always, always. Working with an editor is always great. I mean, I've just worked with a guy called Blaine Pearson at 10.3. It's going to be massive, brilliant, great.
Talk to me about people who've supported you through everything that you've been doing. I know I was going to say pick one, but I know it's always hard to pick just one person who supported you. Who would you say has supported you through everything that you've gone on in your life, or even certain parts of your life that has helped you evolve as a person?
Very hard to say. I couldn't pinpoint one. Professionally, there'd be a few people.
Yeah.
They'd be very supportive. But, you know, there's been people that haven't been so supportive. And I'm someone who I've learned to do a lot of things on my own. I try not to, because I found people tend to let you down. They're great when you're doing favours for them. And then when you do that favour, they're busy, X, Y, and Z. So over the past few years, I've learned to be very much a one-man band, which I'm actually a little bit tired of, I have to admit. And I've been very lucky. One of the good things that I've come across, the people I've come across who have helped me have been fantastic, and who I've worked with, and they stay, and I work with them constantly. And, you know, then you meet a lot, you kiss a few frogs, you know. It's
like business. Tell me about it, yeah.
At the moment, there's a very interesting person I'm working with on the film side of things who has been, we've been chatting for 10 years. We've been talking.
Oh.
And he's stayed in touch with me. And, you know, he's a producer of movies and stuff. And I've been writing, and I was just coming to the end of it. And he said, you know, show me what you've got.
Yeah.
And I went, oh my God, moment of truth. So I emailed all my stuff through, which I'd had a few near misses, actually, over the past couple of years. And I thought, we'll see. Because he's the real deal. And he said, yeah, I'm going to do these. I know X, Y, and Z. X, Y, and Z can send them through. And,
yeah.
You know, a man of his word, which is great. When you have people like that, it's fantastic. And also people like great editors I've worked with who have been fantastic when I've been struggling, where I've needed time in the edit suite. Editing is such an important part of it, and a great editor is incredible. And this last project wasn't what you call, we had no money, and we did it on the weekend of lockdown.
Yeah.
And my editor and James Evans, who was the sound guy on it, wow, what he is, a BAFTA nominated guy. I put a call out on LinkedIn, can anyone recommend anyone? And he applied to it, and he said, listen, I've been really busy. I'll do this as a favour, pay it forward. And I thought, okay. He goes, I can only give you like two cracks at it, and I'd have to take what he came back with. But what I did was as with the editor, it was a really strange way of kind of putting over what I wanted. I sent the music to the editor. I said, if you listen to this music, this is how I want to evoke the flow of the film. I gave music cues instead of film cues. And I always had this idea of an orchestra tuning up. And I said to the Jane, you know, an orchestra tuning up, that is the way in to do the music, the sound design, rather than music for this film. What we came back with blew me away. It was beautiful. It was minor tweak, and it was good.
See, I like that. How do you feel that photography, music videos, and short films will evolve in the future, especially for the next generation coming up?
Interesting. I think the fact we've got this camera and film studio in our pockets.
True.
Is great and not so great. It's brilliant because myself, you know, I make these little things on my Instagram, for my Instagram, where I'll go and shoot something on my phone, and I'll edit it on my phone. I'll add some music on my phone, and boom, you published it. And it blows me away every time I do that. And I wish filmmaking could be that easy, you know, because there's so many people involved that I think filmmaking is becoming less it's becoming a little bit fast food at times.
That's true.
You know, but then you have great directors that come along and, you know, they redefine things for me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you look at people like Paul Thomas Anderson, who I think is the greatest film director living at this point in time, you know, he redefines directing for me every time I see a film by him. Superb. And he's not a fast food director, but there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I love comic book movies. And you know, and I don't mind slapping on a bit of Tarkovsky now and again. Yes. You know, you take a bit from everywhere and you put it in the blender and you come up with your own flavour, and there's nothing wrong with that. The technology is getting easier to use, which is great.
That's true.
You know, that's fantastic. And, you know, there's kids who are 7 or 8 who understand how to cut sequences together.
Yep.
Wow. Amazing. I'm jealous. I wish I was kind of born in this generation where you could do that. I would have been, you know, on my 10th film by now. You know.
But you can always bring them into your team. So,
I'll magpie from everyone. You know, it's brilliant, and it's, but at the same time, what is we're losing is the knowledge of cinema and technique, which isn't necessarily me. Film is being technologically. Technology is driving cinema.
Yeah,
and that's great. Because that's part of it. But at the same time, the knowledge of cinema through history and technique needs to be taught as well. They need to know who X, Y, and Z is and this film. And because once you know the history of cinema, you can throw it away and do your own interpretation.
Yeah,
and that's even with music videos, or with photography, it's with everything. Everything changes, but nothing changes at the same time. But to move forward, you've got to know history.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at people like these great directors that are working now, someone like Christopher Nolan. He's a modern, robust director that's, you know, his films make £1 billion, you know, every time they get released apart from during pandemics. But, you know, if you like him or don't like him, he's still actually an incredible director. But he's an incredible director because he's schooled in history. And that's in his DNA. And once you have that, then you can create modernism, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's important. And I think I try to do that. I think, I bridge the back end of the Ridley Scotts and Tony Kays, who, you know, shot 35mm. And, you know, I'm not a purist like that. I love technology. I love the idea of digital. I love what you can do with digital. And every year it just gets more and more interesting. I love the romanticism about 35mm or 16, especially 16mm. But, you know, the reality is we haven't got those budgets. But if you know about film stock, you know, you can take that into the edit suite and you can do stuff. It's great.
Who are some of the people that you admire and would love to work with if you had that opportunity to make a film or to make a music video with? Who are the people that you would have? Who are your dream team? Who is your dream team?
In what, in front of the camera or behind it?
Behind the camera.
Oh, good question. Darius Conji would be incredible.
Ooh.
You know, to work with him. Wow, it'd be amazing. I tell you who the beauty of Instagram is, I have had conversations with some cinematographers that I really admire. And, you know, we've talked about, I said, you know, I'd love to work with you. And they're either being very polite or they're being very honest. Yeah, I'd be up for it. Yeah, I've seen your work, and it's been, you know, there's a couple of guys. I won't signal them out because I don't want to jinx it. I'd love to have the opportunity and the budget.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm playing fantasy filmmaker at the moment with a couple of the scripts and thinking, well, there's this cinematographer. Actually, it's the guy who shot The Master, Paul Thomas Anderson's Master, and he shot a film which I actually really like. I've forgotten the name of it. Francis Ford Coppola's one with Vincent Gallo. Got blank. And I think he's Romanian. Anyway, we got chatting and I said, listen, I've got this, one of the scripts that I've got being read at the moment. I really, if it ever goes forward, I'd love you to look at it. You know, it's a conversation, you know, and the beauty again of technology is you can reach out to people.
That's true.
I do. And many doors get slammed in my face. And then occasionally someone doesn't slam the door in my face. You know?
But you have to keep kicking down the doors because you never know.
Oh, constantly. It's the mantra of my career.
Yeah.
Which goes to, from how I got into this industry, is about kicking down doors.
Exactly.
I think I've subscribed to that and had to subscribe to that all the way through. Yeah.
When it comes to creativity, Darren, how do you consistently stay creative, especially when you're feeling uninspired? How do you build yourself back up to be inspired when you're feeling uninspired?
I'm always inspired by something. I mean, I think if you're a natural creative person, I don't even like to label myself as that. I'm just someone who does what he does, you know, when I'm allowed to do it. I read, I take photographs, I draw, I watch movies, exercise. You know, without sounding too new age, I kind of discovered yoga around 6 years ago. And that changed a lot for me, I think.
Yeah.
Hell of a lot, actually. But, you know, I think creative people can't help but be creative. I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
You know, no one paid me to write my film scripts. Yeah. It's just something I had to sit down and teach myself, you know. And there's one script which I started writing in 1997, 1998. Yeah. And it's around 40 drafts in, you know, maybe more. I mean, I go through stages where I'll pull it away and I'll go on to other stuff. And I keep coming back to it. And it was really long. It was epic. But it had to be because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just teaching myself to write. And as I've gone on and written other projects, which I think are a little bit more professional, a little bit more tighter, and I've gone back to this as my kind of gym, writing gym. And I keep working on it and working on it and working on it. And I've got it down to a reasonable length now, and it's actually quite tight. It's actually really short compared to how it was. And it's all the better for it. So, you know, you just keep working. Always work. Always take photographs. And no one has an excuse anymore. I mean, the problem is, you know, everyone's a photographer. Everyone's a filmmaker. You know, everyone's shooting something. You know, everyone can be a director, but not everyone's a filmmaker.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyone can wave a camera around and cut it together. And, you know, we have this, you know, we're the bastard children of French New Wave cinema, where you can put this shot here and this shot here together, smash it together. It works, you know. But classicism, and this is going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, to learn about the basics about filmmaking, which is great, how to really cast, how to understand wardrobe, how to understand set design, how to understand location finding, how to learn how to turn water into wine on no budget, and how to kind of tell a story, tell narrative. Narrative is the most important thing, even if you're not actually using classic narrative. You know?
Yeah.
And I think those things maybe are getting a little bit lost with the ease of people picking up a camera phone and being able to film on
them.
Whereas I think with, I don't want to sound like an old guy on his lawn screaming, but I think the restrictions of filmmaking in the past created better filmmakers to some degree. But saying that, when you the ability to do anything and everything with a phone camera or whatever, you know, pick up an SLR and shoot,
yeah,
gives you the confidence and the constant honing of your skills. So it's 50-50, but it boils down to not what you use, it's how you use it.
Yes, I always say that. Like I always say, it's not the camera, the person behind the camera.
Yeah, I think it is. And it goes down to those basic skill sets. I definitely think that, you know, some great talent coming out because of that. Some not so great talent.
Here's a question for you, Darren. So it might be a bit hard one. It might be a bit of a hard one. So what one film would you say would describe your life? So if you had to pick one film that was the story of your life, because you love directing so much, what one film would you choose?
I'm going to have to edit this one. I don't know. It's very film. Yeah, actually, no, I do actually. I do actually. Actually, weirdly, I can answer this. It's a film by Ken Hughes who directed Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Ah.
We made a film prior to that with a guy called Anthony Newley. I'm a big fan of very old cinema. I mean, really. And it's a film he made called The Small World of Sammy Lee.
That sounds familiar.
Not many people know it. It never really had a big release. It's now, you can get it on Blu-ray. I'm sure you can get it on iTunes. And but it's not a, it's a really, it's a film not many people know. There's a quite a nice story attached to this, actually. I was researching something and I came across in the foreword of a book I was reading while I was researching, actually, the film I was telling about, which was a film I've written 40 drafts on. And it's about this guy in Soho who owns money to a bookie and he's got a day to pay it back. And he runs around Soho. He's an MC of a strip joint, an old school strip joint in Berwick Street, you know, and it's all black and white, but Soho looks exactly like it does now, really. You know? And it's about him running from A to B to sell this, to get that, to get this, to build up the money, to pay the bookies back. How does that describe my life? I think it describes my ducking and diving, wheeling and dealing, and trying to get projects off the ground and to the finish line. I think that sums me up. And the stress that goes with it at times.
I like the way you described that. It was really good.
Yeah.
I understand the concept of it.
All the Sammy Lee. And actually, that makes a lot of sense, actually, when I think of a couple of other scenes in that film. Yeah. Small World of Sammy Lee.
What is the most important thing to you in the world right now? So what is dear to your heart right now?
Health, being well, I think that's to be the most important thing for everybody. And selfishly, moving forward, because we're very much in a pause pattern. Things are slow.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite funny when all this happened. I was really on the, there was a lot of things happening that got paused.
Yeah.
I was going to do a short film. I was going to go do two short films, actually. And they just got, but at the same time, you know, this producer came into the fray and the movies I've been writing started to take prominence and they've gone into wherever they've gone and we'll see what happens there. And I was finishing off a nice commercial, which is we only finished a few weeks ago, so which was a very slow process for various reasons. So I was mentally quite busy and now I'm just taking the foot on the pedal, off the pedal, which is the first time I've done since I think I got into this game, just to take stock and see who I want to work with in the future, where I want to work in the future, and how I want to work in the future, which is, you know, we spend so much time going, I want to be this, I want to be that, I want to be this. I've done everything I wanted to do, and I'm now kind of spring cleaning everything that I don't think I want to do anymore and what, where I want to go. And it's quite interesting to take stock. It's been good. And it's quite exciting because it's interesting what things keep coming in. It's crazy. I mean, I'm always surprised, like with you reaching out to me and someone else reaching out to me and someone else reached out to me a few weeks ago about something. And it just got, you know, I don't even have an agent in London per se, you know. So it's like, how people find your work is always quite fascinating.
Where there's a will, there's a way. And like I said to you before we started the podcast, it's the energy that you put out.
I hope so. I try to. I've always tried to be very honest how I work. And I try to always, which has been detrimental at times, give everybody too much of myself, projects. You know, I should have learned. There's many times I think I've learned I should have said no.
I think we all should say no.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Learning to say no, I think, is as important as learning to say yes, please.
How do you find peace for yourself, Darren?
I think that's just knowing who you are and knowing, having some core values that you don't move from. Always try to be decent. Learn to count to 10, even when you know.
Yeah.
You know, you should say something and just, it ain't worth it.
Yeah. What's the best advice you've ever received from someone, and what have you done with that advice throughout the years?
I'll tell you exactly. There's three quotes I've always, two are in my, actually the script I've written. Spending, lending, giving away are the hardest things to do in a day. Borrowing, begging and getting your own are the hardest things I've ever been known. I think that's just brilliant.
I like that.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And I opened my film up with that quote. It comes from my neighbour. Great. Harry Gilman. And actually, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, and it's a journey that you
have done. Yeah, and that sounds very new age and a bit cliche, but I was actually told that by someone I respect who was a big director, and he was right. It's peaks and troughs. And it's about being very true to who you are as a creative or a director and not being swayed too much and not trying to. I've joined companies in the past and they've signed me because of the style of my work and what they've liked about my work. Then immediately try to shave the corners off and try to put a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah, I thought so.
And it's never worse. You can say, you know, just have some patience and it will find its way. I mean, you know, going back to the past 12 months, you know, getting a phone call and someone saying, listen, you're up for Dolce & Gabbana campaign. You go, what? Yeah, we put you up before we even told you. They just put me into the fray, and all of a sudden that was going on. It didn't happen in the end. Project, but you know, and you just go, how does that happen? And I think that's about just being true to yourself as a director. And I've had a production company working with me, I say, you know, this is where I'd like to go and this is what I want to do. I've always had a very clear understanding of what I can do and my limitations and what my strengths are. And yes, you can do this, yes. And because you're not, people are scared to just let people breathe and just say, we've got something here. Let's work with that. Don't, you know, let it develop, let it breathe, let it grow. Because I think if I look at myself as a director 5 years ago and the director I am now, I can see the growth, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. I've learned so much, but I've had to do it myself, and I've had to fight. The fight is incredible to get the projects. You know, I went out and started to get the projects I wanted to work on. One, because I just felt every time I joined the production company, they did that to me. And I was just losing time. And I couldn't sit around waiting for someone to deliver a script to me that would move my career forward. So I went out and did it on my own, which was, it's been a battle, but it's been brilliant because I've got the chances to work on projects, which got me to that point where the phone went, this is this production company trying to get hold of me. And, whoa, what do you want? You're in Paris. And, you know, so listen, we put you up for Dolce & Gabbana. We think we didn't have anyone on our roster that had your sensibilities, which we think the script has, and we think you'd be right for it. And you just go, okay. It justifies that shaping of your creative career, which I've had to do on my own, rather than add an infrastructure or a production company going, we get you the scripts, and it's twice as hard, but it is what it is, that you do it on your own, you know? And I think that's the strength of what I've been through. I've done it all on my own so far, you know, with help when I've needed it, but or else I would have been dead and buried 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I think.
Let's talk a little bit about budgets a little bit more, and I'm going to throw a question at you. So if you had an unlimited budget, so now you've had the dream budget that you've always wanted, what would you change in the film industry to make it better for people coming in and people who are already working within the industry?
I think if you've got money, you've got less fear. There's less fear.
That's true.
Oh, actually, maybe there's not. Maybe there's more. I can never gauge it. You know, it's just you've got longer production, more time to shoot. I mean, I've had to do commercials which are 3-day shoots in one day. That ain't fun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the luxury of being able to film the script with the time that the script needs comes through budget. Everything comes through budget, you know. Who you can get in front of the camera, who you can get behind the camera, who you can, you know, work in post-production. And, you know, it gives you choice. Sometimes you don't have those choices. And when you've got choices, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, wow. What is the incident, one incident in your life, Darren, that has made you reevaluate your creativity and also made you reevaluate how you interact with people?
I was at a production company that didn't treat me very well.
Okay.
And it was quite a very not a particularly happy period. And I came out of that going, I want to walk away from it. This was a bit of a watershed moment. And I decided that regardless from now on, I'm going to stick to my guns. I would never behave like they weren't getting work for anybody, and they started to kind of be very, I can say, just was very unpleasant. I could go into it, but I won't. Trying to actually make me walk away, which I did after a while. And it was just a very unpleasant experience. And it changed my way I worked, I think, because I realized that I only want to work with decent people, people that are respectful, people where the work is important. And I'd rather not. I joined that company out of wanting to be signed to a production company. You know, I wanted to feel that I wasn't an outsider. And my gut was saying, don't go, don't go. But, you know, I was young, I was naive, and I went. And I walked away a lot wiser. And it shaped, I think, everything about how I move forward. Yeah. And that comes from don't rely on people. There's very few people that really say, you know, can deliver. You've got to go out there and look for it yourself.
That's true.
You've got to work hard. You've got to keep pushing. You're going to get knocked down. You've got to get up. Keep going and keep going and keep going, because it does pay off. And you become probably the creative or the director or whatever, the photographer or the illustrator that you dreamt about, sat on your bed as a kid. When you first had that initial thought and you went, yeah, I want to be this. And I think when you learn to do it on your own and then let people join the party,
yeah.
Instead of going, I'm here, now you do everything for me, you become better because you learn. I don't know, it's just, you become very grassroots. You learn to do everything.
It's like creating your own round table, basically.
Very much so. Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Good way of putting it. I like that. Yeah, very much so. And I'm very cautious about who I let sit down at that round table.
And you should be, because it's your table.
Very much so.
Definitely. Define what success means to you as an individual, Darren.
Success for me is putting my head on the pillow on a night and going, it's been a good day. Like regardless that. If it's, and I'm not talking about money, I'm not talking about just that feeling of good. I feel good. Yeah.
Exhale.
It's the simplicity of being excited about the day, you know, getting up, making your first cup of coffee and going, okay. And I approach this kind of mindset all the time, is every day try and achieve something.
I like that, definitely. My last question for you, Dan, as well, is where can we find you on all your social medias? If anyone wants to get in contact with you, the way you did it with the Levi jeans, to help you be the great director that you are, where can we find you on all your social medias?
I would, you can get me on Instagram, it's probably the best place. Facebook I never use really, which I have. But if you go to my website, darrenstatman.com,
yeah.
It has links to everything, and you can say hi to me on there.
Sounds cool to me.
Yeah,
I like how I wish you guys could see Darren right now, because he looks so relaxed. So relaxed and chilled out. It's so nice. Darren, I want to thank you so much for coming on the Us People podcast.
It's been a pleasure to do.
Perfect. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the Us People podcast. And please remember, you can subscribe to Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and any other platform that you prefer listening to. Please also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can also donate to the Us People podcast by simply going on the Savvy Rocks website or just typing in paypal.me/Us People Podcast. Thank you for listening. Stay happy, stay positive, and as always, please continue to be kind to one another. Gotta keep my energy and peace of mind. I need a solution. Yeah, I'm done. I'm done with her. Yeah, I'm done. I'm done with confusion. Yeah, I'm done. I need a solution. Peace of mind. Gotta keep my energy and peace of mind. I protect my energy and peace of mind. Gotta keep my energy and peace of mind. Peace of mind. Gotta keep my energy and peace of mind. I protect my energy and peace of mind. Gotta keep my energy and peace of mind. Peace of mind. Gotta keep my energy and peace of mind. I protect my energy and peace of mind. Gotta keep my energy and peace of mind. Peace of mind. People say that having a peace of mind is trying to find a consistency of calmness within ourselves, to crave for a clarity that drives us through our emotional journey of life, to never let a person's judgment manifest into a fear inside of us, learning to believe in our ability to shine through the darkest moments and tunnels when we cannot see the light. Patience being our light for forgiveness and strength, to believe in our destiny
If you want real peace of mind, one needs to stop fighting their inner thoughts and embrace them with love, because love is the most amazing and beautiful strength that we have to conquer our peace of mind. Make your thoughts impact a nation by keeping them true and honest, especially to yourself. But make your peace of mind protect you when you don't have strength to embrace anything else. Find your peace of mind by listening to your heart.
Okay, you're a very good interviewer. I you hear these people that come on this podcast and it's, I'm this. I don't believe it. And I think to be a really great creative, I think if you can't dip into that inkwell, I never went to film school. You know, and I'm one of those people that I'll get it wrong, but maybe first, and then I learn from that, and then it works, you know, because I know how to do it. I've got to do something first, maybe not do it as 100%. Why? You know, it's like, I look at the first thing I ever directed, but it's a really strong piece that holds up. You know, it's quite funny still, but gosh, you look at that and you look at where you've gone now. Thank you.